Donovan rubbed his red mop of hair savagely and expressed himself with bitterness. We'll be the laughingstock of the system, Greg. How can everything have gone so wrong so soon? The great team of Powell and Donovan is sent out to Mercury to report on the advisability of reopening the Sunside mining station with modern techniques and robots. And we ruin everything the first day? A purely routine job, too. We'll never live it down.
We won't have to, perhaps, replied Powell quietly. If we don't do something quickly, living anything down, or even just plain living, will be out of the question.
Don't be stupid. If you feel funny about it, Greg, I don't. It was criminal sending us out here with only one robot. And it was your bright idea that we could handle the photocell banks ourselves.
Now you're being unfair. It was a mutual decision, and you know it. All we needed was a kilogram of selenium, a still-head dielectrode plate, and about 3 hours' time. And there are pools of pure selenium all over Sunside. MacDougall's spectroreflector spotted 3 for us in 5 minutes, didn't it? What the devil? We couldn't have waited for next conjunction.
Well, what are we going to do?
Powell, you've got an idea. I know you have, or you wouldn't be so calm. You're no more a hero than I am. Go on, spill it.
We can't go after Speedy ourselves, Mike, not on the Sunside. Even the new INSO suits aren't good for more than 20 minutes in direct sunlight. But you know the old saying, set a robot to catch a robot. Look, Mike, maybe things aren't so bad. We've got 6 robots down on the sublevels that we may be able to use. If they work. If they work.
There was a glint of sudden hope in Donovan's eyes.
You mean 6 robots from the first expedition? Are you sure?
They may be sub-robotic machines. 10 years is a long time as far as robot types are concerned, you know.
No, they're robots. I spend all day with them, and I know. They've got positronic brains. Primitive, of course.
He placed the map in his pocket.
Let's go down. The robots were on the lowest sublevel, all 6 of them surrounded by musty packing cases of uncertain content. They were large, extremely so, and even though they were in a sitting position on the floor, legs straddled out before them, their heads were a good 7 feet in the air. Donovan whistled.
Look at the size of them, will you? The chests must be 10 feet around.
That's because they're supplied with the old McGuffey gears. I've been over the insides, crummiest set you've ever seen.
Have you powered them yet?
No, there wasn't any reason to.
I don't think there's anything wrong with them. Even the diaphragm is in reasonable order. They might talk.
He had unscrewed the chest plate of the nearest as he spoke, inserted the 2-inch sphere that contained the tiny spark of atomic energy that was a robot's life. There was difficulty in fitting it, but he managed, and then screwed the plate back on again in laborious fashion. The radio controls of more modern models had not been heard of 10 years earlier. And then to the other 5. Donovan said uneasily, "They haven't moved."
"No orders to do so," replied Powell succinctly.
He went back to the first in line and struck him on the chest. "You, do you hear me?" The monster's head bent slowly, and the eyes fixed themselves on Powell. Then in a harsh, squawking voice, like that of a medieval phonograph, he grated,
"Yes, master."
Powell grinned humorlessly at Donovan.
"Did you get that? Those were the days of the first talking robots, when it looked as if the use of robots on Earth would be banned. The makers were fighting that, and they built good, healthy slave complexes into the damned machines."
"It didn't help them," muttered Donovan.
"No, it didn't, but they sure tried."
He turned once more to the robot.
"Get up!"
The robot towered upward slowly, and Donovan's head craned and his puckered lips whistled. Powell said, "Can you go out upon the surface in the light?" There was consideration while the robot's slow brain worked, then,
"Yes, master."
"Good. Do you know what a mile is?" Another consideration, and another slow answer.
"Yes, master."
"We will take you up to the surface, then, and indicate a direction. You will go about 17 miles, and somewhere in that general region you will meet another robot smaller than yourself. You understand so far?"
"Yes, master."
"You will find this robot and order him to return. If he does not wish to, you are to bring him back by force."
Donovan clutched at Powell's sleeve.
Why not send him for the selenium direct?
Because I want Speedy back, nitwit. I want to find out what's wrong with him.
And to the robot, all right, you follow me. The robot remained motionless, and his voice rumbled,
pardon, master, but I cannot. You must mount first.
His clumsy arms had come together with a thwack, blunt fingers interlacing.
Powell stared, then pinched at his mustache.
Uh-oh. Donovan's eyes bulged. We've got to ride him? Like a horse?
I guess that's the idea.
I don't know why, though.
I can't see... Oh, yes, I do. I told you they were playing up robot safety in those days. Evidently, they were going to sell the notion of safety by not allowing them to move about without a mahout on their shoulders at all time.
What do we do now?
That's what I've been thinking, muttered Donovan.
We can't go out on the surface, with the robot or without.
Oh, for the love of Pete!
And he snapped his fingers twice. He grew excited. Give me that map you've got. I haven't studied it for 2 hours for nothing. This is a mining station. What's wrong with using the tunnels? The mining station was a black circle on the map, and the light dotted lines that were tunnels stretched about it in spiderweb fashion. Donovan studied the list of symbols at the bottom of the map.
Look, he said, the small black dots are opening to the surface, and here's one maybe 3 miles away from the selenium pool.
There's a number here. You'd think they'd write larger.
13A.
If the robots know their way around here.
Powell shot the question and received the dull, yes, master, in reply.
Get your inso suit, he said with satisfaction.
It was the first time either had worn the inso suits, which marked one more time than either had expected to upon their arrival the day before, and they tested their limb movements uncomfortably. The inso suit was far bulkier and far uglier than the regulation spacesuit, but with all considerably lighter, due to the fact that they were entirely non-metallic in composition. Composed of heat-resistant plastic and chemically treated cork layers, and equipped with a desiccating unit to keep the air bone dry, the inso suits could withstand the full glare of Mercury's sun for 20 minutes. 5 to 10 minutes more as well, without actually killing the occupant. And still the robot's hands formed the stirrup, nor did he betray the slightest atom of surprise at the grotesque figure into which Powell had been converted. Powell's radio-harshened voice boomed out,
"Are you ready to take us to exit 13A?"
"Yes, master."
Good, thought Powell. They might lack radio control, but at least they were fitted for radio reception.
"Mount one or the other, Mike," he said to Donovan.
He placed a foot in the improvised stirrup and swung upward. He found the seat comfortable. There was the humped back of the robot, evidently shaped for the purpose, a shallow groove along each shoulder for the thighs, and two elongated ears, whose purpose now seemed obvious. Powell seized the ears and twisted the head. His mount turned ponderously.
"Lead on, Macduff."
But he did not feel at all light-hearted.